Welcome back to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. Coming up a bit later this hour, we'll talk with National Music Museum Director Cleveland Johnson about an exhibition of instruments once played by Elvis Presley, Johnny Cash, Muddy Waters, Bob Dylan, and others. But first, when Gifford Pinchot entered Yale in 1885, his father asked him, "How would you like to be a forester?" Pinchot said he had no more conception of what it meant to be a forester than the man in the moon. But 20 years later, he was named the first chief of the U.S. Forest Service under his friend and collaborator, President Theodore Roosevelt. A documentary from WVIA Public Media in Pittston, Pennsylvania, tells the story of this early American conservationist. Seeking the Greatest Good, the Conservation Legacy of Gifford Pinchot airs Sunday afternoon on SDPB-TV. Joining us now to talk about the documentary and the legacy of Gifford Pinchot is writer, director, and producer Kristen Doran. Kristen, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Executive Director Tom Kura. Tom, thanks for joining us as well.
Oh, thank you so much.
Well, I'd like to go back to that time. I mentioned that the story about Gifford Pinchot's father asking him, "How would you like to be a forester?" Where did his interest in forestry come from, Kristen?
Well, Gifford Pinchot was largely influenced by his parents, both. And his father, he was a very successful and wealthy man who had the opportunity to stop pursuing wealth in itself, and he turned his interests to conservation. He had traveled in Europe and seen sustainably managed forests in Europe, and that wasn't something that America was practicing at the time. It was really just cut and run. You cut down the trees, you turn it over for either agricultural or real estate.
So there wasn't much of a concept of conservation during the Gilded Age?
There was no concept of conservation, no.
And you touched on the perception of forests during that time. They weren't seen as something that needed protection. There's something to be used up.
Well, all of our natural resources at that time were seen just for that reason, just to be used up and to bring wealth to new Americans.
The whole concept of Gifford Pinchot's conservation, Tom, the term practical conservation is used throughout the documentary. What is practical conservation?
Well, I'm the executive producer, by the way, but yeah, the practical conservation concept is that you pick, for an example, selected trees and you harvest them opposed to clear-cutting the forest. And so Gifford Pinchot's a concept was really practical in that you don't clear cut. You select certain species, certain trees, and you work the forest to keep rejuvenating itself so the forests are available and the natural resources are available for generations to come, opposed to just cutting them, clearing, cutting them. You have, you know, a water runoff. You're displacing different species, and it's a major destruction opposed to just doing it in a practical way.
Is there a difference in terms with conservation versus preservation? Are those two different ways of looking at how we treat forests?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Yeah, the nature of conservation versus preservation. Is that the same thing or two different ways of looking at the way we treat, in this case, forests?
Tristan, I think you might be better to answer that.
Okay.
Absolutely. You know, well, one of the interesting things about our film is that we point out the difference between the two. Preservation, as the environmental era was really starting at the turn of the century with these new ideas of conservation, there were also preservationists, such as John Muir, who saw nature for its restorative qualities, and he wanted to preserve that whole entirety just for that purpose. Gifford had a far more practical approach. He saw these natural resources not only for their beauty and restorative value, and certainly he felt that certain areas should be kept, such as the national parks. He was very much a big supporter of that, but he also saw that a far larger portion of our natural resources, the forests and our mountains, these areas that were being exploited by miners and timber companies and the railroad magnates, these areas needed to be protected for everybody, because they recognized even then their effect on water quality. And he saw practical conservation as a means to protect those larger lands by allowing multiple use on those lands. So they were allowed to be cut, but not clear cut. They were allowed to be used, but saved for the nation's benefit as a whole at the same time. So preservation and conservation are really two very different sides of a similar movement.
What was the response to Gifford Pinchot's conservation philosophies during the time, during the Gilded Age and even into the Progressive Era? Did he have support among people, or were they controversial notions?
They wanted to lynch
him. They were extremely controversial at the time. As you can imagine, journalism wasn't what it is today, and in the West, particularly, those large tracts of land that he worked so hard to protect, they were really being controlled by those railroad magnates and the company towns, per se, so that when he was trying to protect those lands, he faced opposition by the people who were trying to exploit those lands, and he was able to disseminate that information. He had to actually go out to the West and explain to these people how conservation was really going to save them, save the land, and make their lives better.
And how was that received at the time, when he went out west?
Well, once he was able to get to the people and speak to the people, they weren't very happy to see him. They thought that he was going to take their opportunity away. As soon as they got there, he was going to take their opportunity to make their lives better away from them. That really wasn't the case at all. And once he was able to explain to them the practical side of it, people really did stand behind him and understand where he was going. But he faced opposition throughout, from political factions and from the wealthy who were really building a fortune exploiting our natural resources.
Did it help at all that Gifford Pinchot came from a wealthy family, since he was one of the wealthy people?
Yes, it did. It helped out immensely, because his family had a lot of political influence, not just because they were wealthy, but also because they were in politics. So there was a lot of interest there. He used his family's influence and finances to become a very important person to Teddy Roosevelt in creating the National Forest System.
How did that? How long were or where did that relationship between Gifford Pinchot and Theodore Roosevelt begin? When did they first meet?
You know that answer. I can, Kristen. I know that when they first met, they became very close very quickly. And they were both very macho men, if you will, that really enjoyed the outdoors and hunting and fishing, and they had a lot in common. And so when they started talking about this vision, and there was, I believe, and Kristen, correct me if I'm wrong, but there was a large opposition in the House of Representatives about creating these national forests, because obviously constituents wanted to have at them, and it was called the Midnight Forest, where they sat down with large maps of the country, and they circled these forests, and he signed a bill, and they put it in the State Department. Is that right, Kristen?
Well, they snuck it in at the very last minute, not giving Congress the opportunity to change the bill. So he
right.
was able to overnight, theoretically, save 9 million extra acres of forest land.
So
before they were going to take his ability away to set aside those lands. It's really an incredible story. It's one of the most exciting points in the film, to be honest, because first of all, we interview Teddy Roosevelt, his great-great-grandson, and he gives a play-by-play of their meeting. It's really just a charming point in the film. And then moving into their efforts together, working together. Gifford is chief of the Forest Service, which he established under Teddy Roosevelt and Theodore and President Roosevelt's own efforts to make sure that this happened and happened in the right way, because there was plenty of corruption standing in their path.
How were forests managed in the U.S. before the establishment of the U.S. Forest Service?
There was a Bureau of Forestry, but it was in the Department of the Interior under the General Land Office. And this is a point in time where immigrants were moving out west, and wealth were moving west to get to these resources before anybody else. And there wasn't really any control. It was more of a first come, first served basis, and the people in charge of those general land offices out west, it became sort of a pay-to-play situation, and corruption was rampant at the time.
Tom Corey, you're saying that they weren't managed much?
No, they weren't. There was this structure in place, but as Kristen pointed out, there's a lot of corruption, and the structure was really catering to those that were in a position to exploit the resources.
You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke, and we're talking about the documentary Seeking the Greatest Good, The Conservation Legacy of Gifford Pinchot. It's a production of WVIA Public Media in Pennsylvania. The documentary airs Sunday afternoon on SDPB-TV. With us, Kristen Doran, writer, director, producer of the program, and Tom Kura. I said you were executive producer. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. Why did you want to produce a documentary about Gifford Pinchot at this time?
Well, we produce about approximately 6 documentaries a year at our station, and Gray Towers is in our market, in our television, our viewing area, and Gray Towers was the home of the Pinchot family, where all these conservation efforts and the U.S. Forestry Service and all these big ideas about practical conservation conservation was actually adopted. It's a beautiful stone mansion that sits up on the hill, it was gifted to the U.S. Forest Service by the family in 1963 when President Kennedy came to Gray Towers to accept the gift and adopt it as a property of the U.S. Forest Service. Since then, the Pinchot Institute, I think, was adopted right around the same time, and it's a think tank where people from around the world can come and visit and talk about practical conservation and work out these ideals to better serve our natural resources around the world. So we always knew this was a really neat asset in our region, but nobody really knew about it. And so with the 50th anniversary of John Kennedy receiving or accepting this gift from the family is coming up this September. So that's when we felt this would be a good time to tell this story.
Kristen, what does the title Seeking the Greatest Good mean? That comes from a quote from Gifford Pinchot?
It does. It's one of his most famous quotes, though he has quite a few, and it was in its entirety, the greatest good for the greatest number in the longest run. And that means doing the best thing possible for the greatest good of our nation, which is very important to him at the time. And also, moving into today, it carries on a larger meaning, really. The work of the Pinchot Institute follows his intention of really serving two things. In every conservation challenge, you need to make sure that your solution makes sense for the people, so socially, for the environment, and also economically. As I think most conservationists are adopting in this recent time, things really have to make financial sense if they're going to have legs. And that's really what Gifford Pinchot meant by the greatest good. You work towards the best possible solution that serves the most people for the long run.
In talking about Gifford Pinchot's biography and going back to his time when he was the first chief of the U.S. Forest Service, he was dismissed by Theodore Roosevelt's successor, President Taft. Why was that?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's also kind of a funny story in our documentary. President Taft just really, he had gone into office promising to carry forward President Roosevelt's actions, and as soon as he got into office, he really turned his back on all the efforts President Roosevelt put into conservation, and those natural resources became available again to the highest bidder. And there was one particular instance where somebody working under Taft had made a decision that went specifically against a policy that Theodore Roosevelt put in place, and Gifford Pinchot called him out on that in the press. And so he was fired immediately for insubordination. But the Forest Service never forgot its leader. And to this day, they are still very proud of Gifford Pinchot. And Gifford Pinchot never turned his back on the Forest Service, forestry. He was always a forester, foremost.
That's even though his career continued. He had two terms as governor of Pennsylvania. So he had a long, active life, even after he was no longer the chief of the Forest Service.
Very much so. Yes, he always was working towards making a difference.
And Tom Kura, for people who watch the documentary Seeking the Greatest Good, what is it that you, in the end, you want people to learn not only about Gifford Pinchot, but also his efforts and the concept of practical conservation?
Well, I think really it's about the practical conservation theory, which it comes to the middle. And as you know, and as we know as citizens, our government has a tough time coming to the middle. But this approach to conservation, where we can actually utilize our natural resources in a productive way without destroying them completely for generations to come. That's what we really would like people to understand. There is a balance and there is compromise. And one of the things when we were producing this, you hear this constant droning coming from Washington where there isn't any compromise. They can't seem to get to a place that they can move things forward. This is how things used to happen. And hopefully we can get back to this type of discussion again.
Well, Tom Kura, thanks so much for taking the time to join us on Dakota Midday.
Oh, thank you for having us. It's really a pleasure.
Yes, and Kristen Doran, thanks for your time as well.
Thank you.
Tom Kura is executive producer, and Kristen Doran, the writer, director, producer of the documentary Seeking the Greatest Good, The Conservation Legacy of Gifford Pinchot. It airs Sunday afternoon on SDPB-TV at 3 Central, 2 Mountain. You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke, and coming up after a short break, we'll talk with National Music Museum Director Cleveland Johnson about an exhibit of instruments once played by Elvis Presley, Johnny Cash, Muddy Waters, Bob Dylan, and others.